Hello and welcome to the Nature Storyteller Podcast. As we celebrate the spring equinox, we also come to the end of our first series. We are so grateful to all those of you who have listened to us since our launch at Salway. And we hope that you enjoyed the 24 nature-based tales we have shared with you. We are so excited to know that we have a couple of hundred regular listeners and about the same amount of you who tune in occasionally. We would appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to our podcast. It is free and helps us reach new people on podcast platforms. The spring equinox is a time of new beginnings and harnessing nature's energies. As we share two tales today, we hope you find their messages as relevant today as they were when they were first told. Our first tale originates from the borders of Scotland and England, and we guarantee you will enjoy listening to it. So sit back, relax, and let's begin. The story of Thomas the Thatcher. Now this is the story of Thomas. Thomas was a thatcher who was very skilled at his job. When thatching a roof, Thomas knew the type of straw he needed, and Thomas always knew just where to cut that straw. Thomas knew how to bundle the straw and store it so it stayed fresh until he was ready to use it, and of course, Thomas knew how to lay the straw on the roof to stay flat and tight. Once Thomas had fixed the straw, it would keep out the wind and the rain and ensure the house was warm and dry and cozy inside. People say the village was beautiful with its bubbling brook, fields of gold and green, and the streets of cobbles with the wee cottages and their perfect thatched roofs, every one of which Thomas had thatched himself. Now, lairds and ladies would pass through the village in their carriages just to admire the beauty and splendour of those immaculate thatched roofs. And it wasn't long before the lairds and ladies asked Thomas to thatch the roofs of their mansions. Once the laird's friends saw the splendour of their new thatched roofs, they asked Thomas to thatch their roofs too, and very soon Thomas was busy thatching roofs across Scotland and throughout England. But no matter how busy he was, how far he had travelled, or indeed how wealthy Thomas had become, he always made sure that he kept his neighbours' wee cottages and roofs in the village tight and tidy. Thomas was a good man, and the villagers knew his skills at thatching made their village stand out as the most beautiful. And that is why, for a long time, they ignored the roof of Thomas's wee cottage. You see, Thomas's roof was messy. It had big holes in the middle, with stray bits of thatch straggling the edges and loose bundles of raggedy thatch. Sometimes, when the wind blew, clumps of thatch would blow off Thomas's roof and land in his neighbour's gardens. Now this was all a bit odd, you see. It wasn't that Thomas didn't work on his roof. In fact, the neighbours would see Thomas up on his roof regularly weaving and working the thatch, but somehow it was always a bit messy and it never looked tidier. One morning, after a particularly windy night, Thomas's neighbour went into his garden only to find it covered in loose thatch again, blown off of Thomas's roof. Now on this day, the neighbour could no longer ignore the situation, And after clearing up his garden yet again, he marched down to the Justice of the Peace office and he filed a complaint. Thomas was put in prison until the justice returned from his travels, which was several weeks later. But everyone just had to wait. Now, while they waited, the villagers all began to join in with Thomas's neighbour's complaint. It seemed that no one would speak up to defend Thomas, despite his excellent work for the little village. When the Justice of the Peace returned, he set off for the village and he asked his carriage driver to drive down the street where Thomas's wee cottage stood. As they did, his heart sank, for it was clear that the roof of Thomas's wee cottage was indeed messy. The justice arrived at the village pub at exactly midday, and the whole village was inside to meet him. Now, this was a very difficult situation. You see, everyone in the town liked Thomas. He was a good man, and his thatching skills had kept their wee cottages warm and dry for many years. However, they also sympathised with Thomas's neighbour, who was forever clearing up loose straw blown from Thomas's roof into his garden. A hush came over the pub as the justice called for Thomas to be brought before him. "Thomas," said the Justice of the Peace, "this village is known as one of the most beautiful in the land. The tidy thatch roofs of the wee cottages are a credit to the village and evidence of your skills as a thatcher. Except for your wee cottage, Thomas. Can you tell me why you cannot repair your own roof?" Thomas looked around the room. He could see all of his neighbours, who were all of his customers, looking at him in anticipation. Nervously, Thomas cleared his throat. "Over the years, I have made your roof so well that no water gets in and the wind cannot blow through. No thatch is blown out of place or rots before the new thatch is installed. It has kept you all warm, dry and cozy, and looks tidy. However, if I had made the thatch on my own roof the same, the wee sparrows would have no space to nest and raise their young. If I kept the edges of my roof even, then the swifts and the swallows would have had no protection from the rain. I made holes in my roof for the red squirrels to hide when the cats and the hawks chase them. If my roof were the same as all of yours, there would be no birds to sing us awake in the morning. The bees would have nowhere to rest and make their honey. There would be no squirrels to plant acorns and hazelnuts, and no bats to eat the insects and flies that would otherwise bother us in our gardens." Thomas looked up slowly and into the faces of his neighbours. It was the first time they had heard him speak with such passion and commitment. The Justice of the Peace, who, to be truthful, liked Thomas and knew him to be a good man, and certainly did not want to send him to prison, addressed the people of the village. "Please decide which you prefer. That we ask Thomas to make his roof the same as the one he made on your house, which has kept you warm, dry and snug. But we will have no bird song in the morning, and no bees, squirrels, bats or sparrows. Or do we agree that Thomas keeps the roof on his cottage to look after the wild creatures we share this land with. The villagers quickly agreed that they liked things just the way they were. And the justice released Thomas and offered him a ride home in the justice's carriage. Along the way, the justice asked Thomas to come and rethatch the roof on his barn and to make it just the way that Thomas had made his own roof, because the justice loved the sparrows and the squirrels and wanted to know that they would always have somewhere to nest and hide. I like sharing this story, as it perfectly captures our desire to live harmoniously with nature and wildlife. By letting our gardens grow a little wilder, we can provide shelter and homes for various creatures. A natural thatched roof can be a comfortable, warm, weatherproof roof for your house and also provide a home for wildlife and still be a beautiful sight. So let's be a little bit more like Thomas and make our gardens a harmonious environment with nature. I hope you enjoyed the story of Thomas the Thatcher. Living and eating in sync with nature is not new, yet it is more relevant now than perhaps ever before. Buzzwords such as green and eco have become commonplace. Still, if they lead to more people to align themselves with the cyclical rhythms of nature, then they are worth embracing. However, we should never condone greenwashing, as it is dishonest and unethical. Our second tale is a universal story that originated in Southern Ireland, but is present in almost every culture worldwide. Its message resonates with all of us, regardless of where we live. Are you ready to hear it? Good. Let's close our eyes and immerse ourselves in the story of the Sunken Palace. Once upon a time, and a long time ago, in the far south of Ireland, there was a king who lived in a beautiful valley. In the valley's centre was a well with the clearest, sweetest water you could ever taste. So sweet and clear was that water that the king built his palace around it. So sweet and clear was that water that the king named his only daughter Fior Fishgar, meaning sweet water. That water was so sweet and clear that people came from miles around to the well in the courtyard of the king's palace to fill their drinking vessels. No matter if they were rich or poor, young or old, or healthy or not, everyone knew that the well at the king's palace was the place to quench their thirst and get the sweetest, clearest water for cooking and washing. Now, after a while, this did not please the king. The constant hustle and bustle of people waiting to fill their empty goblets and barrels and jars and flagons with the sweetest, clearest water became very tiresome to him. One day, the king became irritated that he was always surrounded by people queuing up for water from the well. And he thought to himself, what good is it being a king when I cannot walk across my own courtyard because it is full of people waiting to get water from my well? After all, it is my well, my courtyard, and it is my castle. His daughter, though, enjoyed seeing the crowds. So when the king complained that his courtyard was always full of people, she just shrugged. No matter how much water was drawn from the well, it never ran dry. In truth, the water always seemed sweeter, clearer, and fresher on days when many people were drawn from the well. And the people, well, they were always very polite and grateful. And the princess really enjoyed walking across the courtyard from the kitchens to the great hall, where many people stopped to thank her and say they appreciated the sweet, clear water from the well. And this made the princess feel good. And some days she would walk across the courtyard just to enjoy the conversation. But on this day, it took the king more than an hour to cross the courtyard, and he was exhausted when he finally reached the grand hall. Once he was there, the king called his stonemason and told him to build a wall 12 feet tall around the well and to fit it with a large solid oak door. The king asked his locksmith to make the most robust lock with only 2 golden keys. The king would wear one around his neck and give the other to his steward, the only person he trusted. When the people came to fill their flagons and jars the next day, the guards outside the large solid oak door told them that the king had decided that the well would only be for family use. They would have to find their water from somewhere else now. When the princess crossed the courtyard, it was silent and she missed the noise of the people. After a few days, the princess stopped crossing the courtyard so many times each day. And over the next few weeks, she crossed it less and less, until finally, one day, she stopped walking across it. As more time passed, the princess sunk into a silent world within herself and began to not leave her room. After many weeks of silence, she didn't even leave her bed for days on end. The king knew his daughter was sad, so he decided to hold a grand ball, as he had been told that princesses always love grand balls. And do you know, it worked. The very next morning, the princess was up at dawn to begin planning the ball and sending out the invitations. After many weeks of hard work, the night of the grand ball had finally arrived. The princess looked stunning in her full-length silver-blue dress, and the diamonds in her tiara twinkled like the stars in the night sky. She was the perfect hostess, greeting and welcoming every guest, including several young men and a couple of princes she had invited, so she checked them out. Once the music started, the princess danced with each guest until one particularly handsome young prince caught her eye. He was dashing and handsome and an excellent dancer, so good that when she was in his arms, the princess had a feeling deep in her heart that she had never felt before. And then it was time for the feast. The wooden tables groaned at the weight of all the food. There was everything you could imagine, from stews and salads to desserts and fruits, and cakes 10 tiers high. There was so much food that the guests couldn't have eaten it all if the party had lasted a whole week, let alone one evening. But curiously, there was no water. The prince and princess had many dances and developed quite a thirst when they were called to the top table to meet the king. The king asked the prince if he was enjoying the ball. The prince said that he was, and the company was delightful, smiling at the princess. The food is delicious, but there is no water to quench my thirst after all this dancing. Now, this was the moment the king had been waiting for. At that point, the king's trusted steward stepped forward with a beautiful golden jug in one hand and a golden key to the well door in the other, and he presented both to the princess. The king said, "Now, daughter, go and fetch some water for your guests." Now, the princess was not happy at being treated like a maid in front of her new love, and she looked at her father with one of those looks. You know the one I mean. So did the prince, who instantly realized the princess was annoyed, and he said to the king, "If you please, may I join your daughter in fetching the water, as I should also like to take some fresh air." "Do as you please," said the king. So the prince and princess stepped out of the grand hall and into the night air in the courtyard. They walked to the wall surrounding the well, took the golden key to unlock the solid oak door. Princess hadn't been to the well in a year or more, and she was surprised to see that the water was lower than she had ever seen it before. As she tried to fill the golden jug, she just couldn't reach the water below. She stood on her tiptoes and went deeply into the well, but still she couldn't get the water. In fact, it seemed that the water level was dropping the further she reached into the well. The princess, not wishing to be embarrassed in front of the prince, leaned over the edge of the wall, stretched her arms out, pushed her legs backwards to reach the water. But her shoes did not grip, and the princess tumbled into the well headfirst. The prince saw this and reached out to try and grab and save her, but it was too late. He reached deep into the well and tried to get her from the water, but she was nowhere to be seen. As the prince looked into the well in desperation, the water began to rise from deep within the well. It came with such a rush and at such a force that it pushed the prince off his feet and out into the courtyard, but still the torrent of water continued. The prince called out and he tried to warn the people in the grand hall, but it was too late. The water had flooded the courtyard, the grand entrance, and soon was over the roof of the king's palace. By morning, the palace was nowhere to be seen. The lake that filled the bottom of the valley was crystal clear and filled with the sweetest, freshest water. And all the people for miles around came to enjoy the water again. Now, it is said that on a fine day, you can look into the lake and see the palace far below in the depths of the lake. That the prince and the princess are indeed together, whilst the king is with the other guests in the grand hall. Now, I believe this old tale still holds a message for us today, that no one should keep away from others the water of life for every living thing on this planet. And that is the end of our story, The Sunken Palace. hope you enjoyed the story of the sunken palace. We would be so grateful if you would leave us a review on your podcast platform and like, follow, and share our stories on your social media platforms. The Nature Storyteller is on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Twitter X. We are new to this journey, but have received remarkable support and friendship from our fellow storytellers. And we are grateful for the warm welcome and sage advice that we have received. A special thank you to Lisa Schneider for her incredible passion for storytelling and her knowledge and love of nature and wildlife. And to Owen Staton for being a storytelling legend. Owen was the first person I contacted. He is an excellent source of knowledge of folk tales and an inspiration with the passionate way he delivers his storytelling. We highly recommend that you listen to his podcast, The Time Between Times, and we hope one day to join Owen around the fire pit deep in the forest. We would love to hear from you if you enjoy our nature-based folklore and storytelling. Maybe you have a favourite story you would like us to share, or maybe there are things we could do a little better. Then please just contact us. We do read every email. Our email address is hello@naturestoryteller.org. That's hello@naturestoryteller.org. And of course, last but certainly not least, a huge thank you to you for listening to us, whether you've joined us today and maybe take the time to go back and listen to some of our earlier stories, or if you've been on the journey with us from the beginning. Thank you. We look forward to returning in April with Series 2 of The Nature Storyteller. But for now, happy equinox, however you celebrate it, and see you in April. Thank you for joining us today at The Nature Storyteller. I hope our stories have taken you to a beautiful place, deep within your own imagination. And at the same time, I hope you've gained more knowledge about the natural world and wild creatures that share it with us. Storytelling has always been a way for our ancestors to share their understanding, learning, wisdom, and knowledge of their world. Through the generations, these stories have entertained, informed, and inspired people, and they continue to do so to this very day. Now it's time for me to return to the forest and begin a new adventure that I will share with you on the next Nature Storyteller